I'm sort of a stand-in, too. You may have been expecting German Gonzalez, but he is not available, so I appreciate y'all giving me a chance to speak. And I just want to take a few moments to orient you to the Federal BioSense program and how it can help a health department support the HIT needs, especially through the syndromic surveillance requirements from meaningful use. So, you know, I'm just going to highlight the importance of local relationships and then kind of walk through some of the changes within the BioSense program and hope that that will be informative to you all. And as you know, local health departments completely depend on their relationship with their providers. You know, there are things, you know, from providers and labs, local, you know, I say providers and hospitals as separate entities here, but I guess what I'm trying to say is that the local physician as well as the larger hospitals, they're expecting case reports, they're expecting, you know, additional clinical information that may be needed and specific lab results to be reported. But it's also critical that they have cooperation in the event of some sort of outbreak. They might need to do investigation things as well as ask for additional tests to be submitted, or specimens to be submitted for testing. And of course, they might ask a facility to change their practice, you know, if for some reason their practice is leading to infections. So they really, it's key that they have these relationships. And in the past, the BioSense program was not really set up to promote these relationships. Their original model was that all the data would go directly from a hospital and straight to the Centers for Disease Control and kind of end run the whole local relationship. They got a lot of feedback about that, and they've made quite a few changes in their design, which I'll go through. So now they're building BioSense 2.0 environment on a cloud infrastructure. They're actually working with Amazon Cloud Services to provide this, and that's going live in November 15th of this year. But the idea here is that there's a shared space within the cloud where a local jurisdiction, which are these green dots here, can share data. It could be detailed data or it could be aggregate data. They can share it with each other. They can share it with CDC if they like to, but they don't have to. But they still maintain the relationship with their providers, which are the red dots here. And then they can also share with the public, which is sort of a new thing. And in fact, there's a pilot of that that just happened, not through BioSense, but through an Essence installation within Tarrant County, Texas, where they have this open Google project where they're presenting trend data to the public through Google, which is pretty unique, but I think has been well received in their community. But the idea here is you don't have to participate in BioSense 2.0. You can participate kind of adjunct, you know, kind of you can use the services if you're a local health department to capture the message that's been defined for syndromic surveillance through meaningful use, and then download it to your local system and just continue on as you always have and not really share your data with anyone. Or you can participate in the shared environment and share again with CDC, the public, or your neighbor, or people that you need a short-term relationship with. The examples that I've heard are, say that, you know, one of your favorite sports teams is coming in town, and so, but you know, it's from San Francisco, and you're in Atlanta. You guys could share data around that event if you'd like to, and you know, so these sort of things. Also, there's a model here for research, so you could share certain types of de-identified data in an aggregate view or however you deem appropriate with your local research institution or people that you work with to do that sort of research. So I think that this is a pretty big change in how these types of systems are delivered. I think it offers a pretty remarkable resource to the local health department, because they're going to potentially be able to reduce or completely let go of much of their local infrastructure and rely on the cloud now. And currently, anyway, the way that that will be funded is through CDC. Of course, we could all envision a day where that may not be the case, and that, you know, you may have to kick in some to maintain the infrastructure, but it would surely be less than your local costs for maintaining infrastructure repeated over and over in every jurisdiction. So just to kind of simplify this, in case you didn't get the kind of graphic before, some people call this cloud infrastructure kind of like a data locker. So you have, if you're the local health department, you have your own space, your own data locker, and you can have your hospitals deliver data there. You could potentially upload other types of data, pharmacy data, or DOD data, VA data, into your data locker. And again, you can run your own system off of that data set, or you could share that over with your state and they could run a system, or you could share that over with CDC and use, or not share it with CDC, but use their system within the cloud. There's a lot of configuration options for the local health department. But the main difference and the main point, really, is that this data locker is completely controlled by you. So whether you're the state or the local health department, you control these filters. Whoops. You control these filters that allow the data sharing, so you can control what gets shared, when it gets shared, how long it's shared, and those types of things. Okay, I just wanted to point out that this new infrastructure is community-owned. So it's also a shift from before, where CDC kind of made decisions in their own walls. Now there's a push to work with the public health associations in order to manage the system. So NATO's role, for example, is going to be build support at local communities and local communities of practice, and also participate in governance. ASTO is actually facilitating the governance, so they sort of are hosting the governance body, which is now being kind of figured out what that will look like. And they're also the ones who have the contract directly with the Amazon Cloud Services. So they're the ones in control of that. And then the International Society for Disease Surveillance, also supporting the system and helping build communities of practice, but is also working a lot in the research and kind of development part of the system, and will be working to find new lessons learned and get those distributed to the people in the field. And CSTE is sort of the lead agency for facilitating participation with jurisdictions. And they're also working to write the data use agreement and some of the rules around the governance. As I said, CDC will fund this environment, and RTI is working as their subcontractor to provide the technical assistance and kind of the infrastructure for the new interface, BioSense 2.0, which has a whole new look than the old system did. So really, I just want to point out that meaningful use is currently, so I don't know how many people know what meaningful use is or to what detail, so I'll just go through it real quick.
Ask a question.
Yeah, who knows meaningful use? Raise your hand. Okay, pretty much everybody. But to what detail, I'm not sure. What I know is that in stage two, there's a hope and a thought that these things that are currently on the menu choice item, like the public health measures of syndrome surveillance, immunization, and electronic lab reporting, will all be shifted over to a required or mandatory core set of objectives. And so it's important that the health department have the infrastructure and be prepared, really, in order to accept these data and to use them meaningfully. And this infrastructure will obviously give them an opportunity if they don't currently have one. In fact, one of the NATO, it's unfortunate Valerie hasn't presented yet, but the NATO profile, I think, said that, I want to say, I might be getting it backwards, but only 46% of health departments are actually performing syndromic surveillance. And that's, you know, based on, I'm talking about local health departments. So there's quite a few health departments that may not be prepared or ready for this, and so this infrastructure gives them an opportunity to...
It's 56%.
56. I knew I had it. One way or the other. anyhow, so I keep seeing people at the door, and I keep wondering if it's Valerie. But anyway, sorry. But I just wanted to point out then that they can also work with their hospitals. The hospitals obviously are interested, very interested in receiving these incentive payments. And so this gives them an opportunity to say, hey, we can work with you, we can help you, we can make sure you still get your incentive payments. And they can use this new infrastructure in the cloud to capture the data. And as I said before, it gives this new collaborative capability to the syndromic surveillance systems, which in the past has not really existed. In fact, it's been quite difficult. There have been a few areas around the country that have done this. One note, most notably, is the Aggregate National Capital Region here around D.C., where you have two counties in Maryland, D.C., and then three or four counties within Northern Virginia that share. But the way that works currently is they port data to a separate system that's housed at Johns Hopkins, and Johns Hopkins kind of houses that. So it's been several years in the works and a little bit clunky, and I think this sort of environment could really broaden the capability as well as offer that to people outside of the National Capital Region to be able to share data like that. And so these things will advance the use of these data. It will help us to identify new partnerships, and overall it will support the use of, meaningful use needs of the hospital for the local health department and their relationship. Pretty sure that's all I had, because I was expecting to...
Okay, take questions?
Yeah, anybody have questions about BioSense or other meaningful use objectives? Yeah.
The government has a big database on it.
Yeah.
So how do you, what are the things in place, security-wise, in the IT infrastructure that you could help the public and say, actually, we have this in place to make sure that that's not going to be a worry?
Right. Okay. So the question was about security and the public worrying about how much information we have about them. And I guess, really, this is a matter of trust. Things like... So as far as the infrastructure goes, it's actually much more secure than most of the local kind of homegrown systems. And there are quite a few safeguards in place that exist for your bank and other things that are considered very secure. But really, it's a matter of trust, and it's a matter of communication, and it's a matter of understanding the purpose and what the use of the data are. And things like the Open Google project in Tarrant County that I mentioned are really good ways to show the public what types of data are being captured and then how they're being used. But the main thing is just being very transparent and communicating the value and the use of the data, which I would say till now, a lot of jurisdictions, there's only a handful that I can think of that have done a really, really good job with that. But to your point, it's going to be critical going forward to continue with participation in this. Yes, sir?
More of a comment than a question. The patient confidentiality and privacy issues, aren't those a couple of the objectives with meaningful use?
You mean the core objectives? Yeah.
Stage one, two, or three, but it seems to me that that's part of it. I know Amy last year, David Blumenthal, the previous OSU director, talked a lot about patients, data security and patient privacy are key components to getting the public on board and trusting this whole HIT, I guess you could call it a project. And I think ONC is to a degree working on that.
It's true, but again, I think the main point is there's always just got to be trust, and
people really need
to see that the reasons why you would want to allow somebody to have your electronic health record, the things, the preventative measures that should come out of a physician knowing your full history and some of the other things that can enhance your care, as well as in this public health reporting stuff, ways that we can keep the community healthier and things like that. But again, we have to be pretty open with the communication on that.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It seems like, if you explain to people that it's going to essentially improve all of our health and make it easier for doctors to get information, I think people understand that in the abstract. But unless you, as you say, can point to the specific example of, well, they did this in this county or they did this in this state, and this is, they were able to save X amount of lives or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, the comment was just that we have to continue to be open with public. They asked us to repeat stuff for the recording, but anyway. And I would say that the best place I've seen around the country that does that is Boston Public Health Commission. And they actually have a really good relationship, not only with their physicians and getting data back to their physicians so their physicians want to participate in the system, but also working with the local newspaper, and they've actually been published quite a few times. And now the public begins to expect them to know these things and expect them to react to these things and is asking, what does your system see? Which, from my standpoint, when I was working in Virginia, is kind of funny because people didn't even know we had a system. But in Boston, they do get these inquiries, and it's that sort of relationship with the public that I think we need to foster through systems like this. But really good point, and thanks for the question. Other comments or questions about syndromic surveillance, meaningful use, BioSense?
I had a question. Will most of these data be pushed to the local health department, or will they have to go out and do a daily pull or a regular periodic pull of the data?
Well, let me answer this question in a couple of ways. First of all, the way it works now is the data are pushed. They're pushed from the hospital to the health department on usually a daily basis, sometimes more frequently.
To the local health department or the state?
Well, it depends on who's running the system. Like in Boston, it goes to the local health department, but in Virginia, it went to the state. So it just really depends on the setup and the environment. So in that case, in the Virginia setup, then the data are then available to everybody within the state.
They would have to go in, log into the portal, and pull it?
They would log into the portal to see it, but the data would be in the system. With this system, it's really going to be almost exactly the same. Well, you could have any setup you like, but the point is, so some states or cities or counties will they'll keep the data in their local data store the way they have always done it. They'll take an aggregate amount of data and they'll push it to the cloud, and they'll allow that to be their what's shareable and in available. There'll be other people who don't want to maintain their local infrastructure, so they'll allow the hospital to connect directly to the cloud, and their data will reside in their data locker. Now, they may or may not use the BioSense interface. There will also be an Essence interface within the cloud. They're not sure exactly when, but they have the contract to make that happen within the next few months. So they could use those interfaces, or they could just download the data into their regular system. If they would like to do that. So if they had a local installation of, say, ears or something, and they wanted to run it against that data store within the cloud, they could do that as well. So it's really just a virtual server, and it's not that much different than if they had the server in their local environment. But it's going to depend on how they want to set it up. So they have a lot of options. Does that answer your question?
Yes. And another question, could you comment on how things are going toward meaningful use of hospitals being able to do a test and state or local health departments being able to certify the test was successful?
Yeah, I heard a talk from Jim Daniel. I don't know if everyone knows who he is, but Jim Daniel is the public health representative at the ONC, and he's been getting a lot of feedback on how things are going. And from what I understood, they're going okay. They could be going better. There's little hurdles, but interesting things are happening. So, like for example, an HIE, I don't remember where this was, but there was a place that he described where an HIE was providing the service for both the facility and public health to translate the data into the meaningful use message, so that the and their met their wherever they are, their state Medicaid agreed that that would suffice. They could meet their incentive payment and get paid for that. So they basically provide their data directly to the HIE. HIE then transforms it into the appropriate message and gets it to public health, and everybody's happy. And I think that's probably happening more often than not, because there's a lot of places that aren't quite ready for all this.
Yeah, well, that would also be a success story as far as interoperability and not having just a standalone syndromic surveillance system.
Yeah. But I think, you know, right now there's still a lot of talks and discussion and not a lot of success yet. But people are moving for sure, working hard. Any other questions or comments? Sorry that we don't have Valerie Stein.
I have a message from Valerie. Oh,
okay.
Valerie is stuck on the metro. She hopes to be here any moment now. And as far as her slides, she emailed them to my work email.
I can pull it
up. You want to try to pull it up here?
Yes.
Anyway, I do have also a printout of some of her slides, which I can start to talk about. And I will start to do that. What Valerie was going to talk about would be data, pretty recent data, from NACHO. Surveys of health IT capabilities of a sample of small, medium, and large local health departments, as well as the data for the NACHO 2010 profile of county health departments. That's a biennial production. It's available through the NACHO website and covers the whole spectrum of local health department services and increasingly their questions about health IT. And so, from the 2010 profile, and maybe Valerie sent that to you, Michael, by the way.
I don't have email. My email account broke.
Oh, even on your laptop?
Yeah.
So Valerie's slide looked at the percentage of local health departments with specific levels of implementation by IT area. And so, as far as electronic health records, those that have implemented EHRs was at 19% of local health departments. And 15% were planning to implement, and 26% were investigating or have investigated. 26% had nothing going on in that area, and 14% it was not applicable if they had no reason to have an EHR. As far as HIE, Health Information Exchange, the 2010 profile, which had more than 80% response rate, by the way, showed that 7% have implemented exchange of electronic info. 5% were planning to, 17% were looking into it, 50% had no activity, and 21% were not applicable. As far as immunization registry, 75% have implemented registries, 2% were planning, and 9% were looking into it, 8% had no activity, 5% not applicable. As far as connecting to the Nationwide Health Information Network, the NHIN, 6% had, 2% were planning, 8% were looking into it, 64% no activity, 20% not applicable. And finally, have instituted a clinic practice management system, which I was showing you, the HMS across Florida. 15% yes, 3% planning to, 6% thinking about it, 47% no activity, 29% not applicable. So, of all those areas, immunization registry far in the lead at 75%, and the rest just really getting started in the 6 to 19% range of implementation. If you look at electronic syndromic surveillance, and by the way, NATCHO looks at small, medium, and large, and usually with these statistics, the large have the highest percentages, the medium in between, and the smallest have the lowest participation, generally related to staffing and resources. As far as electronic syndromic surveillance, by size of population served, overall, we mentioned this earlier, of all local health departments, 56% were involved in electronic syndromic surveillance, which, by the way, is probably the most advanced of the meaningful use categories so far, at least in a lot of the most, registries maybe, immunization registries may be bigger, but one of the hottest topics. And again, by size of LHD, 77% of those large ones over 500,000 served were doing this app. 65% of the medium-sized local health departments serving 50,000 to 500,000, and 49% of the smaller ones serving under 50,000 population were doing that kind of surveillance. And the type of syndromic surveillance by condition, the most prevalent area is influenza-like illness, 89% of syndromic surveillance activity. Foodborne is next at 74%. Magnitude of different kinds of events, 56%. Bioterrorism type events, 54%. Identifying different population groups or geographic distribution, 50%. Establishing case definitions, 37%, and evaluating interventions, 35%. Then it gets into newer technologies. This is, again, from the profile. Web 2.0, which involves a lot of social media subjects. 28% using Facebook. 13% Twitter, 6% YouTube, 6% blogs, 3% MySpace, 2% LinkedIn, 1% other. 65% no use of Web 2.0. How many of you are connected to a local health department, by the way? Okay. And are you using social media, Web 2.0? A little bit? Yes. Yes. That's about the same as in our small sample. That's an interesting area. Florida, we're trying to get into it, and we're a big organization trying to get it through the lawyers, making slow progress. By population served, again, generally it's the large local health departments that have the highest prevalence. Next, we get into workforce, and there is a need for, but a shortage of, public health informatics specialists. So this would be the question, what percentage of local health departments have informatics specialists? And the response was 13% of all local health departments. But in the large ones serving more than 500,000 people, 54% had someone identified as an informatics specialist. And that's what we have. I serve almost 900,000 people, and we have one person who we call an informatics specialist. He hasn't gone through certified training, but that's in the works, and he has other qualifications. 29% of LHD serving 100,000 to 500,000, 14% 50,000 to 100,000, and smaller with the smaller. So that concludes most of her slides. You haven't come up with any connection yet?
I have a connection. I thought you said she had sent it to you, so you'd have to log into your thing.
Mine, yeah.
I have an email from my IT guy that's working on my account.
Okay. No problem.
Well, my personal account.
This is the core message that Valerie wanted to present. She had some other slides, including a really good joke slide. I'm sorry we can't get that up. So, any concluding questions or comments? If not, thank you for coming, and we are adjourned.